Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
The word of mouth.
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 Well, das mut.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Brady Carlson, in for Virginia Prescott. If you follow news on the web, you probably read plenty of what's called aggregate news, blogs that summarize original reporting from other sources to catch the reader up on the latest happenings. My Here's What's Awesome blogs are aggregate news, for example. Now, aggregate news sites can drive huge traffic and, if you're, say, the Huffington Post, some pretty big money, too. That's why even venerable news organizations have gotten into the aggregation game. But as the experience of a young blogger at the Washington Post shows, the push for page views and the need for blogging speed can also put young journalists into some difficult situations. Megan Carpentier is the executive editor of The Raw Story. She recently wrote a piece called Unsolicited Advice to Young Writers the Internet Remembers. Megan, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the story of Elizabeth Flock. She was blogging for the Washington Post's breaking news blog. What exactly happened to her?
Well, what was reported by Poynter and picked up by the Washington Post ombudsman, to which she said is relatively accurate, is she was working for their aggregation side of the site, which brings together news reports from different sides. And putting up a story about the Mars rover, she, as she said, inadvertently forgot to put in block quotes something from another source. In other words, she took lines from Discovery reporting, put it in, didn't cite that it was originally written by them, and published it. It's been called over-aggregation. It's been called plagiarism. It is something – it is basically what was probably going to get her fired before she resigned.
That's what she said, that the situation was such that she couldn't guarantee that she might not make mistakes in the future. What was her explanation for what the working conditions were like at that block?
Well, she said that she was required to – or she was expected to put up 6 posts a day, which is actually not that uncommon in web journalism, and that she was expected to bring in a certain amount of page views, which was upwards of 1 million, which is actually pretty high when you're talking only 6 posts a day, even on a site like the Washington Post that gets a lot of traffic.
And as far as we know, is that becoming common practice? You have maybe one or possibly two newer people come in and – boom, we need you to deluge our news blog with some new stuff at light speed, and also we are going to expect a lot of page views.
I think a lot of sites like ours that do aggregation, we don't necessarily expect the aggregated work to be the most prolific in terms of eyeballs. It just, unless it's a sort of story that everyone is picking up on and we've got a new angle or we've got a new piece of it, really, in reality, you know, aggregation doesn't necessarily do as well as original reporting, which is why you see a place like the Huffington Post spending millions of dollars on original reporting in order to grow as an organization. So it's not unusual to have people come in and have them be the person, you know, kind of keeping up the content flow, but that doesn't mean they're expected to do the same amount of page views as someone doing original reporting.
But in a case like this, if you're asking for that many millions of page views for just the breaking news content, it almost sounds like the page views are driving the strategy.
I think in the case of the Washington Post, it sounds very much like that was the case. From what the ombudsman reported and the other quotes that were given out to the media by the organization, it sounds very much like they put this together in order to keep up with breaking news that their news organization sort of wasn't able to do on their own in the transition from print to web.
How common do you think this problem is, even if we don't necessarily see it, but you could see someone who's coming into a newsroom maybe for the first time, and that workflow is already pretty intense. But then you also add in the fact that I believe she said she was more or less unsupervised. She wasn't getting a lot of editorial direction. And at that point, a person is who's not even quite sure what they're aiming at is having to make a lot of decisions that would require guidance and trying to rely on some unwritten rules that they may or not even know are there. And in a case of aggregation, sometimes the rules are unknown. It's hard to tell sometimes as this field emerges. How does a new writer, a young journalist, even negotiate a situation like that?
Well, I should say my first job in journalism, which actually wasn't that long ago, my per day assignment was 10 posts. So I have a little trouble looking at 5 or 6 as being a lot, having done that, and then 6 to 8 for a couple of years. That's a hard pace. It's the sort of pace that gets you up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, when you're done at 6 or 6:30 or 7 o'clock, you're pretty well spent for the day, and you go to bed and you get up the next morning and you do it again. And it is a difficult pace, but it's intended to be so to a certain degree, because reporting is a difficult pace. It is every day starting over again. I think the important part of this is the lack of supervision. In organizations where I am acting as editor, I think it's very important to set the standards very early. And my biggest standard for my reporters is the golden rule. If you write something and you expect someone else that cites your reporting to credit you, then you need to credit other people when you cite their reporting. And the more you do that, if someone, you know, at that organization picks up your reporting and doesn't give you credit, I can pick up the phone or send an email to another editor and say, hey, you know, we actually broke this story. You actually use a lot of the same sources. You know, you're clearly relying on our reporting, but we don't have credit, and we'd like you to add that. And in most cases, that works, that happens. You know, even if it's not, you know, as direct a, you know, using my reporter's words directly in another story, but we've seen that happen, and at that point we elevated it, and sometimes we've been known to send cease and desist letters because it's not fair, but really it is about the golden rule.
In an era where a lot of newsrooms are cutting back, and I know the ombudsman for the Post said part of the problem here is that we're cutting experienced journalists at the same time that we're bringing in these younger folks to work on the new media side of things. Is there a concern then that going forward, there's going to be fewer people to do that supervision, but also that the people who are doing the supervision may be more on the side of, well, you know, if it brings in the page views, I'm less concerned about the about citing the sources. I'm less concerned about those particulars of who got quoted where.
It's not been my experience that people are unconcerned about that, because in an environment where everyone is aggregating one another and doing it in addition to the original reporting. So it's never been my experience to go to a larger publication and have them tell me to go away, even though I work for a small alt media site. You know, we tend to try to be very good about who we cite, and we tend to expect the same in reverse, and it's worked pretty well to date. I think, you know, just what the first part of your statement, though, about, you know, experienced journalists on the print side and inexperienced journalists on the new media side speaks to an internal debate in the Washington Post about what the proper place of web journalism is, and which is to say it's secondary to print journalism, which in a breaking news environment, in a 24-hour news cycle, in, you know, a cable news, internet news, keeping that sort of artificial separation in place and allowing those sort of veteran journalists to say, well, okay, something can end up on the, you know, internet side, but I'm not really going to do anything about it, is kind of speaks to a problem of negotiating this transition to the digital age.
And the Post did then announce that it was going to revamp some of its training programs to bring some of the more experienced people together, learn what the digital side knows, and vice versa. Is it possible that as the model shakes out, bloggers are going to have better training, they'll have those better resources, and that the problem will likely be solved?
I hope so. I think in a lot of, you know, especially older media publications, it still seems very much like the Wild West. And I think when you're a digital native, particularly on the editorial side, but including with some of my reporters, when most of what they've done is on the web, the rules seem really clear. And it really is about being generous. It really is about making sure where you get your information is transparent. Because at the end of the day, if something isn't transparent, you know, our readers will do it. You know, we'll find in the comments section someone saying, hey, actually, I saw this quote somewhere else first. It's not original to you. So, you know, the readers in the comments sections can even function as, you know, truth-keeping with editors and reporters. And when that's the case, you know, you really do have to be as thorough as possible and back up your arguments.
Well, thanks for being thorough with us today, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Megan Carpentier is the executive editor of The Raw Story. We've been talking about her recent piece offering unsolicited advice to young journalists trying to keep afloat in a sea of aggregation. You'll find a link, just a link, we didn't rewrite it as our own blog post, I swear, at wordofmouthradio.org. We'd like to hear about your mistakes in your early part of your career. On Twitter, join us with the hashtag NewbieFlub. I'll start it off with my own. I once mispronounced my own name on the radio. Coming up, a cochlear implant with laser-like precision, because it uses lasers. That's when Word of Mouth continues.